Well, hey, everyone, welcome to this week's show. As always, I'm so excited to be with you. I have been with you on the show for, oh my goodness, 5 years now. Ridiculous, ridiculous people. So I'm just aging right before all of our eyes, right in front of this microphone. But it's okay, because every week we have great shows for you guys, and I cannot even believe all the great guests that we have. I think God just provides them for us each week, and this week is no exception. Want to let you know that later on in the show, we have Jeremy Keaton back. He is one of our counselors here at Focus on the Family, and he will be answering a listener question about, or from a listener, a female listener, who had a sexual past, has a history of that, and now is dating a guy and they're moving towards marriage, and she needs to know, when should she talk to him about this and what should she disclose? What is appropriate and at what level, at what timing? So Jeremy really has some great wisdom to share with her. Then for our culture segment, I am talking to Peter Furler. Many of you know Peter from the Newsboys.
Yes.
Back in the day. Oh my goodness. I love him, and I love his new album, which is called On Fire. Playing it in my car right now. I went up to Denver. He played after a Nuggets game up there, and had the chance to talk to him and just be real with Peter, find out what he's doing, and really gain some great wisdom from him and the things that he's learned over an incredible career, as well as being a married dude and just dealing with family dynamics and stuff like that. So looking forward to what you guys think about that. But here we are on the front end of the show with our roundtable, as always, and another great group of people here. So I want to introduce them very quickly to you. Sam is here. Sam Hoover. Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
Good to have you back. Sam talked to us about social media at one point, and now here he is again.
I still talk about it.
I know.
I'm annoyed.
Job.
I'm annoyed by it.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. I was the Peter Furler Yes fan. I got to see the Newsboys in concert actually twice. And I actually got to ask Peter a question. It was like, hey, how's it going? And he said, I'm good, man.
Wow. And he didn't offer for you to be his like personal journalist to follow him all around? With
yeah,
those kind
I mean,
of insightful.
Okay. I was kind of young.
That's good. Well, maybe you'll have to listen in on this interview.
Yeah, I'm
let
excited.
Us know, let us know what you think about that. That's good. Doug McIntyre is here. He's a newbie to the Boundless Show. Welcome, Doug.
Thank you very much. I don't have a cool anecdote from the Newsboys.
You don't.
I don't even really know who they are exactly. So.
Oh, my
sorry about
goodness.
That.
Oh, my
heard
goodness.
The name, but you know, I don't listen because I'm old.
Oh, well, you were not even that old. Whatever. Okay. Well, hopefully you'll redeem yourself in this roundtable. That's
I'll
okay.
I'll do what I can. I'll do what I can.
And I also managed to strong arm my dear friend Wendy Zier is here in the room. Hey, Wendy.
Hello.
There she is.
Thanks for having me.
She's wearing a black shirt, and she's almost like blending into the wall behind her.
I think that's her goal.
I know. Think I'm trying that's to blend Wendy. It. That was my goal.
Oh, don't think I'm not going to ask you questions, Wendy.
Okay.
Just be ready. So, well, we are going to talk about, many of you know that last week we talked about thinkers and feelers and conflict and all that kind of stuff. We love getting into people's lives and just figuring out what makes us tick, as well as the struggles that we have. And this week is no exception. Here we are. And I love it how when we pose questions to people like, hey, we're going to talk about something really difficult and personal. Do you want to be on the show? Woo!
You get a lot of response.
People say yes.
Like I was just walking by your guys's office space, and I basically just begged you. Like,
yeah.
When can I be on? I want to be on a podcast.
I know, but that's what happens is when you generally say you want to be on the show, then we pick a show like this, and then
oh,
you're just
gosh.
Stuck.
Oh.
I know. That's what I'm saying. We don't give you the option of like picking what show you want to be on. So, so we're going to talk today about taking and receiving and or rejecting counsel in our lives, okay? You all know that I'm a big fan of mentoring. I'm a big fan of having someone in your life who is going to get up in your grill and tell you what is what, because I have needed that in my life. I have been way overconfident in, one, what I know, two, what I think is correct, and any issue related to wisdom, all of a sudden I realize I'm really wise when it comes to other people. For some reason, when it comes to myself, I just like all sense and biblical guidance just goes out the window and I become a total freak. So
that's
I've had
pretty
to,
consistent with the way most people live,
pretty,
I believe.
Yes.
Yeah,
so I pretty much had to get some people around me, little hedges there to help me along. So we're going to talk about that. And I'm going to start out with my first question, which is just, what are your tendencies? I want to get a feel from each of you guys, because I know each of you, as we get into your stories, we're we're going to hear some specific examples, but would you consider yourself generally open to counsel? Do you find yourself like immediately defensive and then you have to go and think on it and then you kind of come around? Or are you completely oblivious to what you even need counsel on? I mean, you think you're just self-sustaining. Where do you guys rest with that, kind of just from a general temperament perspective?
Well, for me, it just really depends on who's speaking. If it's someone I have a lot of respect for, who I've already given open, you know, pathways into my life to speak, it's pretty simple to listen. I don't get defensive. If it's my wife or maybe someone that I don't know as well, a lot of times I will be defensive right off the bat, but think about it and maybe come back to it.
Okay, now why is your wife in that category? Because she
because
be open
I'm unwise a lot of times.
Okay.
Many of the older men in my life that have counseled me have said it's just really unwise when you disregard what your wife has to say. And,
okay.
And after 26 years, that's been proven correct on almost every occasion.
Okay, all right.
I think for me, it sort of depends on what area of my life you're talking about. I'm pretty open to counsel on pretty much everything. And up until about 2 years ago, relationships were off limits, though. And then, you know, 2 years ago, things opened up for me. So
Been there, done that. That is, I have definitely shared some of that. So, absolutely. What about you, Sam?
I don't know if I'm really good at taking counsel. Obviously, it depends on the circumstance and the person. What I'm not good at doing is taking counsel from a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I try to find one person who says what I want them to say. And then I'm like, yes, that is from the Lord. That is exactly what he has been telling me to do. And how coincidence, it's what I want to do as well. So I don't do a good job at getting a lot of counsel, like a variety of kind of answers, because I feel like, I don't know, the more people speaking into my life, I mean, I'm already a messed up mental case. I already have enough voices in my head telling me what to do, and they often conflict. And so the last thing I need is more people telling me more conflicting answers, right?
Yeah. Okay, so you're kind of alluding to a situation where you feel you need counsel and you're going to go and get that answer you want. But what about when you don't even know you need counsel in something? So I want to ask, what would you say, okay, and this is where we get down to the nitty-gritty, people. What are your blind spots? What are, Wendy alluded a little bit to where she was a couple years ago. What would you say, you know, as you think back of where someone really had to step in and be like, yeah, let me tell you a little bit here.
I remember I did an internship in college, absolutely loved it, enjoyed it, and the supervisor, as I was meeting him with him when the semester was over, who I literally talked to maybe five times the entire semester, he's the one doing my evaluation, and he addressed a couple character issues, and it totally came out of left field. Like, for me, I was just like, whoa, what in the world, what do you mean? Got some clarification on it, because it was just so far out of left field that it struck me. It was one of those things like, oh, I had no idea that this was an issue. A, because we don't have a relationship, never talked to me. But B, I did see a lot of value in his kind of outside, impression or outside, an outside opinion. And so it was one of those like,
and C, you're amazing, so why is he bringing
up? No. and it was absolutely true. What he was bringing up was just one of those moments like, oh, I had no idea, because I didn't have anybody around me who would tell me these things. But frankly, he was seeing me in an internship role, kind of a career role, where like the people who were close to me would see me either at church or at school, you know, in a different environment. And so I put more weight into what he was saying because it was such a unique, unique circumstance.
Well, that's interesting what you say, you know, putting more weight into it. That's something I found is there really is not a shortage of people who are willing to give their opinion. You know, walk through a grocery store with a motorcycle helmet in your hand. Even if you don't drive a motorcycle, you're going to hear about it. And, you know, everybody's cousin who's been damaged by one or something like that. But, you know, so learning where to give it weight. And then sometimes you're right, the surprise factor, where it's coming from or maybe the context. You know, if I'm in a context where we're talking about my competence, in an area where I have a lot of confidence in my competence, well, and somebody comes in and brings up character. Well, that throws me for a loop sometimes. And you know, and that's another one. If someone is questioning my integrity, I think highly of my integrity, but I also understand that I have blind spots. But if it comes out of the wrong place or the wrong person, I have to really think about that. And sometimes it does just put you right back on your heels.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, the way I view sin in my life is it sort of encases my heart, and God has been in recent years been pulling that all off, all those scaly mess. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, my blind spot is where the sin was the thickest around my heart, which in my case was control over relationships. So mm-hmm. I felt like I was in complete control over the relationship I was in. I mean, I had things in order, so to speak. I wasn't controlling him, but I feel like I didn't need people to tell me, you know, to give me advice, mm-hmm. because I had everything under control. Mm. So I think that's my blind spot, mm-hmm. mostly around relationships.
Mm-hmm. So. And talk to us a little bit about that, Wendy, because that kind of leads into where we're going to go next with this. I mean, share a little bit of that story and how it played out, because I was in your life at that
time.
Yes,
you were. You were one of those people.
And that's how you end up on the Balance Show.
Yeah.
So now that we put that out on the table, let's just talk about what, I mean, really kind of from those early days, because this was a guy you met online, mm-hmm. and it was, you know, we had all talked, it was all these girlfriends that sat around and were like, you know, we want godly men, yes. We could talk hypothetically till the cows came home, mm-hmm. you know, and then you meet someone.
Right, I met someone online, and he happened to be from Canada. He wasn't even in the United States, so there was a huge obstacle there, and but he was so charming, mm-hmm. and I fell for him, mm-hmm. and I hadn't felt that way ever, mm-hmm. and so when my friends were, you know, pointing out those red flags that I, now looking back on it, saw but ignored. But they were pointing them out. You guys were pointing them out. I didn't want to hear it, you know, because this was the first time I'd felt like somebody loved me. And, you know, just because of my background, you know, my baggage, which is another focus show. you know, I was really just trying to hold on to that, and I didn't want to let it go.
Yeah.
And so he, you know, we entered into this big, long relationship. It lasted years, and we ended up getting married. Mm. And it had I listened to advice, you know, counsel, and had I paid attention to those red flags, a lot of pain would have been avoided.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think too, you know, and we'll, you know, certainly you'll illustrate this, mm-hmm. Getting to marriage and then walking through a devastating divorce, basically,
right.
out of that hard, very, very hard situation. And hello, pot kettle. I similarly have been in dating relationships where, and many of you on the, you know, who listen to the show know this, I pride myself on being very rational and very logical. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I was dating this guy, and still remember six of my girlfriends sitting in my living room as they told me, after seeing ways that he treated me, Lisa, this guy is not okay. And I'm like, no, listen, here's the deal. He just does this because of this. He does this because of this. And they're like, or he does it because he's a jerk. And I'm just like, oh no, don't worry, because I'm a communicator and I can communicate with people and figure these things out.
Right.
Yeah. Implosion of that relationship and basically massive amount of time wasted.
Yeah, we quickly rationalize that, and I've been in the exact same boat as you guys, and I'm sure many of your listeners have. It's an issue of, certainly it's an issue of pride, but it's also an issue of control. Like I don't want someone to tell me to give up control, all right? Because one, when I know I have two small kids, and when I take something away from them, they cry. Mm-hmm. When someone takes something away from me, mm-hmm. I cry. I am mad, I'm angry, puts me in a terrible mood. I would much rather not have something forced out of my hand, you know, whether it's a kid's toy or whether it's advice, mm-hmm. Like we're talking about today. I don't want to have to experience that pain of someone else telling me what you're doing is wrong. I'd rather come to it on my terms.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think what you were talking about, how many, many of your friends were telling you, and I have an instance in my life I can think about where I was kind of a workaholic. Well, not kind of, I was. And many people were telling me that wasn't good, including my family, my wife, and I just refused to listen. Hmm. You know, I was afraid of the other outcomes of not working hard, and so I let that cloud my judgment. Hmm. And even though everyone was singing the same chorus except me, I just got involved in my own self-delusion, which is, you know, something we have to think about. Mm-hmm. It's simpler for us and more common for us to delude ourselves than it is for other people to do it. Mm-hmm. And so just with that being a fact, or even if that notion may be a fact, we need to consider how important it is to listen to others and give it some weight and walk it out. In my particular circumstance, I finally did start listening to people and decided that I would take action just to prove them wrong. Mm-hmm. And started behaving differently, started spending more time where I was needed, spending more time where I should be in my home. Mm-hmm. And it just took me about 2 weeks to realize, okay, I'm an idiot. I wasn't listening to people. They weren't deluded. What was I thinking? And, mm-hmm. you know, it's been a dozen or more years since that experience. And I continue to apply that template to other experiences because it's very rational to do so.
Mm-hmm. Now, Doug, you are you're actually a church elder. And
that's
I think it's very easy for people who are in positions of leadership, especially spiritual leadership, to say, you know, well, that was, you know, in my past, I dealt with that kind of stuff. Now I just pour into other people. That's what I do now. But you had very real circumstances where you had to take counsel from others who were in authority over you. And mm-hmm. I believe you did. I mean, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that's right. I think the story you're alluding to is whenever I was actually seeking the office of elder in our church. And it was something I really felt called to, gifted for, etc., and spent a number of years in mentorship and in training to leading up to that. And at the point when the decision needed to be made, basically the leaders just said to me, you know, Doug, you're not ready. You know, okay. Hmm. You know, this was kind of the first indication of this that I had that was tangible at the time. There were lots of things that should have indicated it to me, but I wasn't seeing them. So other people from outside had to bring that to bear, and they also had the authority to stop my progress at that time, and they made the decision to do that, and it was somewhat devastating. And I asked, you know, the common question, why me? And it took a long time mm-hmm. to understand that. And you know, there were hints that, Doug, you're arrogant. Doug, we're not sure that you care about people as much as you think you do. You know, they weren't as clear as that, but those were the kind of the flavorings of what was being said. And, you know, I had to come to a point to where, one, quit fighting against that and start wrestling with it and start seeing how it applies. And then also just accepting the people that had authority over me, trusting them, trusting God. You know, it was of my adult life. That was, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, something along those lines. And of my adult life, that was one of the most challenging things I've ever faced.
Wow. So that kind of leads me into my next question, which is probably just a couple years ago. I think I came to this realization. I think it was the sum of my relationship experience. And like I said, some of these implosions, as well as my, you know, feeling like I've been in a lot of positions of leadership. And that's a little bit of a scary place to be, and recognizing my own pride in that. I've kind of come to this conclusion that I need to pick a few people in my life that I give authority to. Mm. Basically, not even knowing that there's a situation out there. So before the situation happens, because obviously when that happens, I'm going to be much more resistant to it, almost to the point where I need to sign a contract with them that, like, literally, this is the time that you need to step up. And, you know, it's like a weird, you know, I always tell people, you know, it's not like I need prenups to get married or something, but something contractually needs to happen where I agree that I'm going to be listening or whatever. So picking these people in your life that you know have authority and can speak into your life. And for me, it would be an instance like, say, moving to marriage, where if I have these three friends that I'm dating some guy and they're like, no, collectively, we agree that you should not be dating him. Mm. I will stop. Mm-hmm. And to give that kind of authority to people, what do you think about that? And have you ever considered letting that play out in your own life?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, after, you know, I mean, everything that's happened to me is still pretty fresh. Mm-hmm. And I half jokingly say that, you know, if God were to bring another man into my life, he would have to run through this amazingly difficult gauntlet through my friends, through my pastors, my elders, and then I may consider having coffee with him. but yeah, I think that is very important. I will never enter into another relationship again without my, you know, input from my friends and people that I respect I respect their wisdom.
That's good.
You know, this is one of the most important subjects I think that we could talk about today. You know, beyond that, we have to change our mindset. Yes, we have to be ready, but we also have to change our mindset and realize that God speaks to us in so many different ways. You know, Scripture talks about the still small voice, and you know, I'm still waiting for the day whenever I don't need the megaphone accompanied by landscape timber up against my head in order to really hear wisdom quickly. But you know, I'm just reminded of the story of Shimei in 2 Samuel 16, where David King has been terribly sinful, and he's living out, you know, the consequences of this. His son wants to take his kingdom away, and here's this man who's just literally hurling rocks and insults at the king of the land, and of course David's men want to go and take him out, and of course that makes sense. You know, who wouldn't, you know, if someone was yelling at our president, who wouldn't see a Secret Service man, you know, going over and tackling him or something? But it was amazing to me what David did. Is he said, you know, no, that man's from God, and I need to hear what he has to say. So they talked about in the rest of the story unfolding how they're walking through the countryside, and this guy's just following along the ridge line, continuing to hurl rocks and insults, and that amazes me. You when you think about it, you know, Dave had his counselors, David had his prophets, and even Nathan though had to trick him when it came to Bathsheba, you know, and with the story of the sheep and the stolen sheep and whatnot. And but to me, that's what I'm talking about. The mindset has to be there. We have to really begin to think, well, where is the voice of God going to come from? And that doesn't mean we listen to everything, but that also means that we can't be dismissive of everything just because we don't like the source or the look of the source or the smell.
It's interesting. What I've usually experienced during those times of giving other people authority to speak into my life is genuinely when they do, they take that responsibility seriously, and when they, honestly, it takes a lot of courage for them as well. When they do speak into your life, they're really just confirming something that I know deep in my heart. Now, yeah, I may be blinded, and I may not want to admit that they're true and that they're right, but deep down, I don't want other people to make the decision for me. I want to make my own decision because that's how I think I learn best. That's how a lot of people learn best, by making their own decision. But taking advice and really letting people not push you necessarily forward, but pushing you kind of left and right back onto a better, clearer path. I think that's an illustration that I can get behind. That way I'm still moving forward, but these people are pushing me in the right direction.
And that's good. And I think just as we close here, the two things that come to mind to me are, one, we need to recognize that God often uses people to accomplish that. You know, I've heard from people that are just like, well, unless God tells me to do it, I'm not going to do it. And I need to, God and I have this relationship and that's what's going to happen. And you know what? Hello. He uses the body of Christ. Okay.
Yes.
Right. But in light of that, let's kind of start casting off these relationships that are with users and abusers. Like, why do we, or people that are just going to tickle our ears, and recognize that the people that really are going to speak into our lives that matter love us and want the best for us. And it's like, we don't trust that, you know, we're just so defensive and so, oh my goodness, you know, what are they trying to get from me? Or they just want me to fail. Or they, no, find the people that truly love you and have your best interests at heart and surround yourself with them and choose them and open yourself up to them, and I think you'll get a lot further. So,
you know, what's interesting is that in my experience, my situation, my wife and I we felt called to leave our home, and we felt called to leave what was comfortable and what was safe. But I had a job offer that would have kept us at home, and we talked to family, we talked to friends, we talked to people who were familiar with our situation, and really just still felt torn, didn't necessarily feel clear to go one way or another. And so what we did was the opposite. We actually found a pastor who was actually the pastor of both of our parents' church. And we asked him, we laid out, hey, here's all of our cards. Here's everything that we're dealing with. We wanted a Christian, unbiased opinion, someone who had no agenda. We didn't want anybody who, I mean, frankly, we're not going to see this person if we stay here. It was just a chance to acknowledge that we needed some kind of outside counseling help. And so maybe that's a great recommendation for anybody who's listening here is if you're looking for that advice and you have friends, you've taken it to your friends, you've taken it to your family, and you're still not sure, go find somebody who is a smart, older, wiser, third person who has no agenda. Lay out what you've got. Let them know everything you're dealing with, and then take their opinion into consideration. Give a lot of value and weight to what they have to say.
Well, I really agree with what you're saying, and I have a strategy in my life that I'm very intentional about. I always want to be dealing with people who are further down the path than I am. You know, someone who's older, maybe not, but someone who's maybe more experienced in life. I always want to have at least a person like that into my life that knows me well enough and that can speak to some of those things that I just haven't come to yet. I also need contemporaries, wise contemporaries, you know, people my own age, with my own interests or same stage of life, whatever that is, so that we can bounce things off each other. But these need to be wise and good people to speak into our lives. They need to be confident at doing that. And we're all going to be a little different in our skill levels, and that's how we can help each other. But we also need to have people that are, you know, not as far down the path. You know, people that we're speaking to, because I know whenever I am speaking into someone's situation, when somebody asks me for the sage advice and I have to really think about it, it causes me to consider what it is I'm saying and what is really the validity and how important it is, because giving bad advice is a terrible burden too, and because it does have an effect on people. But I think that strategy is really important.
That's good.
For me, a couple of years ago started seeing a counselor, and that's that third party. And he spoke truth, you know, and I think I believed because of my upbringing that I deserve the treatment I was receiving in the relationship that I was in. And I believe the enemy was just, you know, it was all the lies that I'd grown up with. And that's what I believed. That was what I believed to be true about myself, that I deserve it, that I have it coming, that I needed to change in order to change the relationship. And he, you know, he knocked that down, that, you know, really quick. And for 2 years, you know, it was, that's, he just spoke truth over and over and over. And sometimes I'd say, you know, gosh, you know, I feel like we keep talking about the same thing over and over. And he said, well, sometimes you have to get rid of 42 years of lies that you've come to believe. So he didn't give up on me. And my friends didn't give up on me.
And I love that he also told you, like, specific things to do. He was very specific, and things where you could have easily said, well, I don't know that that would necessarily work with whatever. And he's just like, no, just do it.
Just do it.
And I'm still find out afterwards, you know, oh, yeah, that made sense.
Right. And, you know, I haven't seen him for, you know, a few months, you know, almost a year. But I'm still using what he taught me, and I'm still growing because of it. So I'm not the same person I was.
Yeah.
You know, that's such a good point. You know, some of the worst advice I've ever received is from well-meaning people that really just were either so blown away with discomfort over my situation that they would tell me anything to make the information stop. You know, you know, and so, but we need that. I mean, some of our troubles are not just garden variety troubles. You know, if someone has a porn addiction or a drug addiction, or, you know, anything along those lines, you know, something that's really deep and isn't going to be over just because we will it away. We need professionals, you know, we need people, you know, maybe somebody who's gone through it before can walk with us. But I have a deep belief in professional counselors that are biblically grounded to really help us. And also, you know, our pastors and ministers who are trained in biblical subjects, who we can go to, and they can really help us unpack what God has to say about certain issues. And that way we're, you know, again, it's not the shared ignorance society that sometimes we can be with our friends.
Right.
It's, you know, somebody who really knows what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, you guys, for being part of this conversation and weighing in on this and really sharing from your own experience and your own struggles, what God has brought you through, because I think that by talking about it, we can encourage others and we can really, be a light in some dark places where people maybe feel there's no hope for what they have going on and really feel like there's no one to hear or could they really take this kind of counsel. So great wisdom and thoughts shared. Thank you all.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks.
Well, hey, everyone. I am here for this week's culture segment. We love doing our culture segment where I have the chance to interview all kinds of folks, whether theologians, authors, artists, and other newsmakers, and this time around is no exception. I am here sitting at the Pepsi Center in Denver, Colorado, kind of watching a Nuggets game on the screen, but not really paying attention because I'm sitting here with Peter Furler. Hello, Peter.
Hi, how you doing?
I am doing very well. It's great to meet you in person.
It's good to meet you in person,
too. You look kind of like the real person.
All right.
Like
you would. So. Yeah, I was looking for a stunt double if anyone's out there. But
oh, well, yeah. How are you doing with the altitude,
by the way?
Just for them
hard gigs, you know. Yeah, I'm great. One of the times I remember playing here was at Red Rocks.
Oh, yeah.
And
that is one of your favorite venues, I understand.
It is probably one of them. And I remember I felt really manly because I didn't need the oxygen tank on the side of the stage.
Okay.
But during the concert, many people were kind of walking over and taking a little whiff.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I had time. That was really what it is.
So. Okay. So are you feeling good about tonight?
Feel good.
Because
you're
doing a concert here after the game,
That's right.
The Nuggets game. So we are here for that. We are very excited. I brought some friends with me who I introduced you to. They are crazy fans. Have kind of, if I'm being honest, maybe stalked you for the past 10 to 15 years. And
okay.
So they will.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean,
motorcycles.
It might be kind of questionable. We'll see how that turns out. But we wanted to, usually when I interview, especially guys in the music biz and folks like yourself who have been around a long time, I like to go kind of beyond that standard interview and really kind of get into your head and heart. And of course, our audience loves that because we love to hear from folks who are just a few steps maybe ahead of us. So as we talk to college kids and 20-somethings, they want to hear from you. So the first thing I want to ask you, Peter, is going way back, I want to ask you about kind of dreams you had for your life back in the day, pre-Newsboys, just growing up in Australia. Like when you thought for yourself that you were going to chart your life out in front of you, as many young adults do, thinking, oh yeah, I got this, I know what I'm going to do. What did that look like, I would say? Were your dreams too big, too small, or have things kind of worked out like you thought they would?
No, they haven't worked out like I thought they would have. I think for me, it was realizing what I didn't want to do. It wasn't what I wanted to do. I think I just began to, it was more like a process of elimination. You know, you started out as a kid, and I had a great job just coming out of high school as an aquatic instructor, and I loved that job. It was teaching people to surf and to scuba and fish, and where I grew up in Australia, that was a very promising career.
Yeah, that's a good gig.
Yeah, it was a good gig. And I thought I was going to be doing that for my life. It was a government job. It was a great thing, and I loved it. But my father moved the whole family about 24 hours driving north away from that town. And he knew I loved the job that I had, and he was really behind what I was doing. But so he asked if I would come and just help the family move, you know. And so I helped the family move. And I never went back. And I just began to get more serious about my faith, lock into church a little harder, meet a different group of people, and it made me realize the group of people that I was hanging out with at the time. You know, bad company can corrupt, or does corrupt, good character, and so I realized that there was two paths ahead that I had a choice. One was the maybe a wider route. It looked easy, it looked good, it looked like the thing, it even felt right, you know, but as I look back today, I'm so glad I didn't. A lot of confusion, like all mm-hmm. of us, you know, of what am I going to mm-hmm. do, you know, and so I really started odd jobs, landscaping, mm-hmm. all the things that guys do that really sometimes don't like to do. Mm-hmm. But again, I think I definitely hung out with some people that were really driven about music and serious about it, and I wasn't. Mm-hmm. All as I wanted to do was I loved playing music and I loved picking up an instrument and writing songs and such, but I would do whatever I could do to not have to dig a ditch and mm-hmm. do someone's landscaping. So that was really, I know it's not a big goal and dream, so really them other guys that were with me, maybe that's the lesson, it's who you surround yourself with. It was mm-hmm. really important. I would not, now sadly none of them guys are making music today, mm-hmm. and I'm the one left okay. still making music, but yeah. but I would not have been able to do it without them for sure.
Well, speaking of influences, and you referenced your dad, I want to talk to him, you know, about him a minute, because he is a pastor, an evangelist, really, and uh-huh. you post his sermons on your Facebook page, yeah. His messages from the beach, as it is. And what was really, would you say, his influence on you, and did you go through any periods of doubt or rebellion as you had to process and make your faith your own?
And definitely, obviously, your first question is, do I believe this because I was raised this mm-hmm. way, and what if I'd been born somewhere else, or... But even before that, I think what makes you process that is example. And mm-hmm. I begin to look at my parents. My parents were not perfect. I'm always careful not to paint a picture that people sometimes, when someone paints a picture, sometimes people think that they just had it more fortunate than somebody else did, and that's not always the case. My parents, I think the biggest thing was really, I saw two people really giving up their whole lives and careers and things for something, mm-hmm. and so I taking less and being less mm-hmm. as far as in the world's eyes to pursue this thing, and so that was a huge influence on me. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing was their marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, was a great thing. They were still are today. They've been married 53, 54 years now, and I think that's the biggest testimony, still has been, to me. And you know, and so I think my father, you know, if he was here sitting here, he would probably feel that he made mistakes. He probably felt he was away too long, you know, being an evangelist or being a missionary and going on extended trips, but since that time he sort of said to me, I'm sorry son, I wasn't there as much as I should have been. So again, nothing was perfect, but I think his example and my mother's example of really walking the walk, they mm-hmm. really have walked the walk, and no, they're not perfect, and mm-hmm. they haven't done everything right, and they would be the first to admit that, mm-hmm. but they have really kept the faith.
Hmm. Well, let's talk about marriage a little bit, and specifically your marriage. You're married uh-huh. to Summer,
yes.
And I do have to say, as an aside, that I personally am obsessed with the music of Bill Gaither and Southern Gospel yeah, and all the yeah. homecomings, so yes. I might be just as excited about your wife as
good,
I am yeah. about you.
You
given
should
her
be. She's far more exciting
attachment.
Than me.
Given her connection to the Lefevre family.
That's
and all
right.
of that,
yes.
So big time in the Southern Gospel world. But your marriage, you have had to very intentionally make that a priority throughout a career where you guys just blew up as the Newsboys. First of all, you know, from a pretty young age and
yes,
starting
definitely.
Out early, and you know, then realizing what you had to reassess. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? About any pivotal points, including maybe the decision to ratchet it back, you know, from the Newsboys, and what that meant for your relationship there?
I think my greatest joy on this earth is my marriage. Hmm. And I couldn't have always said that. You know, really, when you're young and you're pursuing, you're ambitious, a lot of things can, there's trade-offs. And sometimes you trade the wrong thing. For me, I think it was... just getting caught up, you can title it ministry, you can title it whatever you want. But whenever two people start to become disconnected, then there's trouble. And it can happen in a matter of days, and it can last for years. But for Summer and I think it was really just wanting to protect that and realizing that this is, bands come and go, songs come and go, genres come and go, nations come and go, and but for us, we wanted something till death do us part was really, and still is really important. And I think the secret has been, you know, what's that movie, Meet the Parents, you know, they talk about the circle of trust, you know. It's kind of like that in a sense, except there's only really three people in it. You know, it's your husband or your wife and Jesus, and nobody else can get in that. No other man, no other woman, nothing else. And so I think that was where we were kind of swayed by different things for many times. Sometimes, like I said, sometimes it'd be career things, sometimes it could be other people. Again, the certain company you're keeping. You know, I found in my life when I had friends that had were struggling in the marriage, one of the worst things I saw them do was go and start hanging out with divorced people, and get hearing the sob stories and the this and that, and hearing the reasons, and then next minute they're divorced. Where for me, I realized if any time my marriage was felt like something we weren't connected, I'm clinging to men that I. That I love and know, man, that guy, I see the way he talks to his wife. I see the way he talks to his kids, and that's a statesman, and I need to glean a little bit there for a while until maybe I become that. And so, again, that's your influence, but I think that circle of trust, so to speak, is just really, you know, we live in a culture that, you know, you see the movies of the boys' club, you know, the boys heading out for a good time, and the women with their best friends and their soulmates, and they can confide in them, but they can't really tell everything to their husband. That's not a biblical way of living. And actually, that just stinks. I don't care what anybody says. You're not finding your fulfillment in life, but when you can, and Summer and I have had to learn this. We've had to, how do you start? You start by reading the Word together every day. You know, you start, we just read, you know, we don't make a big deal of it, but we make sure that we're in the Word together, so we're on the same page, and we kind of talk about it, and it might be 5 minutes, it might be 15 minutes, it might be 30, and we pray together, but it's not, we're not super spiritual people, but we realize that even whichever one of us is reading, when that goes out into the house, it says something, because the Word's powerful, it's living and active, and so that's just one little example, and staying connected. It's hard to be honest with each other sometimes because we're not as humans, we're not always honest, and so but when you do become honest with each other and trust each other more, man, it's a powerful thing that it's irreplaceable.
Yeah. So who are some of the, would you say, whether you yourself or you and Summer, like any pastors or theologians, like who do you like to read right now or listen to? Who are your influencers?
You know, I don't know. I think at the moment I've had a bit of a dry spell, you know, from reading. I've just gone back to the Bible.
The Bible.
The Bible, you know, yeah. You can, what can you say? But, you know, I love, there's a guy called N.T. Wright, who's one of my favorites. He's the Gospels for Everyone. That really transformed my thinking and made me look at the Gospels in a new light, even from a historical perspective. And so he was somebody, but right now for me, it's just I got some, you know, it's my wife and I. You know, we're in this great season of, and it's been that way for a few years now, a great season, and we're kind of really buzzing on that. You know. Mm-hmm.
So you're obviously, and I told you this on the front end, you're talking to a lot of 20-somethings here in our audience. What would you say is one thing you wish you would have learned in your 20s? Now, as you look back, kind of something that you can encourage 20-somethings with.
You know, be careful what you're listening to and what you look at, and be careful who you hang out with. Be careful of the thoughts. Check every thought that goes through your head, you know, and line it up against something greater than that thought. It can be, for me, it's the Word. It's the Bible. It's the things. If there's something, you know, trust, don't trust your feelings, or don't even follow your heart, because your heart can be wicked. You know, follow that spirit that's inside of you, that's that's been transformed by the living God. And I think, how does that happen? It happens through reading the Word, staying in that, and surrounding yourself with people who encourages. I think that's really important. Not giving you BS. I mean, people mm-hmm. that are encouraging you, really, not flattery, just people that are really have a vision and a purpose, not ambition, just a vision and a purpose of life. And I think that's important to really to as all of us. I think your thought life is so important. And every thought you get, you know, you have to line it up with what God says about you and about what His Word says about you and about His plans for you. Because I meet so many people that they just, the words that are coming out of their mouth, mm-hmm. I can tell that their thought life is, it's not worse than mine. It's mm-hmm. probably the same as mine, but they're letting the thought carry itself through. And we have to look at and be thankful, I think, is a huge thing in life. No matter what your mm-hmm. circumstances are, you have to have an attitude of thankfulness. There's some of the things I wished I'd done and had back mm-hmm. in the day.
Mm-hmm. So I can't be totally into flattery, because I kind of am sometimes. I'm just I guess I have to watch it.
Flattery, yeah, flattery's good.
Let me make a note to myself.
What's the fine line between encouragement?
Oh, okay.
You can always tell when someone. You can always tell when someone's giving you a flattering tongue as opposed to encouragement.
Okay. All right, so if you could craft, we're just heading into 2013, if you could craft the ideal year for you, professionally, personally, just if you could say, this is what where I want to go with God, this is where I want to go in my marriage, this is what I want to do, what would that look like?
I don't think like that. I don't go far down the line. It scares me to do that.
Yeah.
It scares me. I just, tomorrow's got enough trouble going on. You mm-hmm. know, today I just kind of, I'm really thinking about here, I'm thinking about my wife at home. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about, you know, going on stage to hopefully I can remember the words and the chords. and that's really it. And as far as, I think, you know, the future, I don't know what the future has. I didn't know it back then. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. And I don't have any, I think I'm still in that way the same. I'm a thankful person. I'm really thankful for doing what I, you know, to be able to do what I love to do, and so that's just really it. I don't have any big. It's not that I don't have a vision. Mm-hmm. I think I've maybe the answer you're looking for is part of my. You know, in the last few years, as Christians, we can sometimes think that. We have many different gifts, and you're this, and you're this, and that. But really, I think I've tried to. And being a singer in a band for many years, many people have said to me, "Well, you're this or you're that." And it's like, well, I'm like, okay, and I've believed it for a bit, and mm-hmm. now I've realized that no, this is what I am. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a great focus to go down and to know who I am in Christ, not know who I am in a band or know who I am as something mm-hmm. else. But and that's helped me to really whittle it down to. Knowing what truly are my gifts and stirring them up. Hmm. And so maybe that's the future. That's the future mm-hmm. is I'm a singer and I'm a songwriter. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm meant to do. That's what I feel my gift is. And so however that translates, I believe I'm going to write my best songs yet. Mm-hmm. I believe, mm-hmm. I can feel it. I can, mm-hmm. and I don't mean commercially, I just mean that's, and I believe I'm singing better than I've ever sung. And so they're things, but that doesn't mean that things will be like they were,
right?
You know, and
sure.
so if that makes sense. So sure. I was sort of zoning down to realize this is what I do. Mm-hmm. These are my gifts. This is what I love to do, and this is what I do, and I'm going to do that to the best of my ability, and be prepared and practice that. But and whatever that takes me, mm-hmm. then that's maybe where I'll go.
What song do you never get tired of singing? You could put it in your set list every night. Personal favorite.
The last one. You know, I'm just kidding. No, I enjoy playing live, but I don't think I really get tired of playing. I'm very blessed today where I can kind of play what I want, mm-hmm. you know, and I've written over 150 something songs, so mm-hmm. I got a lot to choose from. So I was down there in the change room now going through chords of songs, some of them I haven't played mm-hmm. live in years. And
oh no, we'll tell you the ones to sing.
Yeah,
don't
and
worry.
I like that
we've
too.
Our,
yeah.
we'll write it up.
That would make it way easier for me. Somebody just held up a sign. All right, we'll do it. And I've done that too.
Okay,
I've had a few concerts, people just yelled out and I said, all right, we'll do that.
Okay.
So, but I think the one thing you don't get tired of is that you might play, sometimes you'll play the same, a song like He Reigns. Mm-hmm. You'll play that. I don't know how many times I've played it. I've never got tired of playing that because the chords are the same, the words are the same, but the people are different. Mm-hmm. That's so tonight, I don't know what to expect when I go out mm-hmm. there. And but the people is what that's what would be different. So that makes it cool, you know.
Yeah, that's great. And when you, so just kind of last question here, when you write a song, like you just alluded to 150 songs, hello, I have not written 150. I'm at like 148 right
you
now.
You just need a couple of good ones. Well, I've written plenty of them.
You've written all the good ones already. There's nothing left for me to write.
There's plenty left.
Okay, I'll work on it. But do you go about, like, what's your process? And I know you've written with Steve Taylor, and he's a totally wacky dude. I mean, I've talked to him.
He's from Denver, too.
He is, I know. Yeah, I know. He should have come
I've been in the studio, Steve and I are producing my new record.
Yeah.
And so we've been in the studio.
Okay.
And yes, we've written a ton of songs together. For me, it usually comes when I'm not thinking about it.
Okay.
If I go down to that change room now and sit there and try to write a song, it probably won't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But if I just start, turn on the amp and grab the guitar and start pressing buttons and things, and I just play, and my thought process nearly stops. Mm-hmm. That's usually where I find something.
So you don't find like lyrics first or music first, or
I find
it different?
Whatever. That's what I mean. Anything will come. Might be just a lyric or a line. Mm-hmm. Usually melody is what comes for me first, and usually there'll be a little bit of a lyric that came with that melody. That's it. But I think one of the things I've discovered this year, even or in the last couple of months, has been that as a songwriter, it's really important to have a glad heart. Mm-hmm. You know, I know there's a scripture, I can't think of it now, but it talks about songs coming from a cheerful heart, and that's really what, you know, whether you're a believer or not, that's the same gift. That's probably why a lot of people will maybe hit alcohol or something to kind of get them sort of, you know, cheered up for a moment. Mm-hmm. And you see certain artists doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that's another thing that I've discovered in the last few months, that just try to, you know, create the environment before you're even creating.
Okay.
You know, set yourself up right, you know.
Cool. Well, very cool. The current album, the one that I'm playing in my car right now, is On Fire.
Thank you. Love it. Thanks for listening.
Loving it. I mean, definitely a few favorite tracks up there. In fact, the one, the All In Your Head, I just keep hitting repeat. So, love that one. Personal favorite. But just give us a little preview. When's the new one coming out? What are we looking towards?
I'm hoping. It's been really amazing. I've been in the studio with Jimmy Abegg and another Denver guy, and John Painter, Steve Taylor, and myself. And we've just sort of really taken it as a band record. And we have tracked, I think, 10 songs in 10 days.
Oh, my.
So it's really quick.
Wow.
And I've never done that before. And it's been the best experience of my life as far as being in a studio. But we've still got to finish off some lyrics and a few more tracks. So it should be ready, you know, early this year, you know, spring this year to summer. I'd say summertime maybe.
It's up to
the record label, really. They're the ones that... That, you know, we finish it and then we go, here it is. So they go, well, it's going to fit in this slot. Yeah,
there you go. Good. Yeah. Well, Peter Furler, thank you so much for taking time with us here at the Boundless Show. And definitely, you know, if you're here in town, you just need to drive about 45 minutes south for Colorado Springs and visit us there.
Yeah, I love that there.
And if we ever do, we want to do a Boundless event, so maybe you need to come. We've got a ridiculous number of Aussie fans.
Really?
So, we're
hello, you Aussie fans and everybody listening. Thank you for listening.
I know. You didn't even throw in any weird, like, jargon just for them to
understand. No, I didn't.
You're mainstreaming yourself.
You had me flat out like a lizard drinking. That's
whoa. Okay, we don't know. Not that kind of drinking.
No, okay. Well, yeah, with Aussies it could be. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much
thank
for
you,
being
appreciate
part of this.
It.
Awesome.
You weigh the moment like a watershed, when all you've heard and all you've read will push you toward your call. And you weigh get up, your seat, move your feet, just
We are opening up this week's inbox, and I have Jeremy Keaton with me 2 weeks in a row. Welcome, Jeremy.
Woohoo.
Very glad to have you. Thanks for doing this and weighing in. Jeremy is one of our counselors here at Focus on the Family, so has a lot of day-to-day experience with walking through life with people and helping them in various struggles. That's awesome. Well, our listener right here, this is an interesting question. She says, I was very promiscuous in high school and slept with several people. I got saved, and since then, God has been working in my life. I met a guy in college who loves Jesus and treats me like a princess, and we're moving toward marriage. The time's coming where I need to be open and honest about my sexual past, but how do I bring up that conversation with him? How many details must I share, and do I allow him to ask questions?
That's such a mature and important question. I'm really glad to hear the question, and I'm glad to hear that this individual understands that sharing about the past is important. It's important as you move into a serious relationship. And there is a stage-appropriate place to do this, I would say, to the individual asking, and it sounds like you're there. So you can say something along these lines. Hey, we're talking about the future, and that excites me. And since we're thinking about the future, I want to let you know some things about the past, some things that I've taken to God, and things that you and I may have to work through. But as for the details, what to share, as a counselor, I would say you do want to talk humbly and fully about things, but there's no need to be graphic. So follow these thoughts. Be general, but accurate. Tell the whole truth, not parts of it. We don't want things to trickle out slowly and create trust issues. Avoid sidestepping and whitewashing things. And to do that, you can use a what and a why approach. What occurred, and why are you sharing it? The what are the basic, full and true facts. I've had sex with a male in the past, or multiple someones, during my high school years. That's what this individual perhaps could say. And the why for sharing, I did not want that to be something I withheld from you. I wanted to respect you and honor the trust that we've grown. I want a healthy foundation going forward. I want to talk through this with you and a counselor, if that would help. You see, that is the what and the why. And starting there is very appropriate and very mature. And yes, consider his questions, but not haphazardly. Ask him to write things down that he thinks would be important to talk about or ask. And then think about those. Don't rush into an anxious frenzy of details before you think through the real necessity and productivity of those details. And if you're not sure, checking with a counselor or a really wise mentor would be smart. But this is important, and it's a very mature question, and I'm glad it's a conversation that's being pursued in a thoughtful way.
That's good. And it also makes me think, I know when I've had friends that have asked me this just personally, you know, related to their own experience, the other thing I would definitely caution against is naming names. You know, the last thing you need is to give this guy an opportunity to go and like internet stalk these people or find out where they are now. I mean, hopefully, you know, I can't believe how many people I know are still Facebook friends with, you know, toxic relationships from their past, and they're trying to hold on to elements of past relationships and stuff. And would you say, Jeremy, that it's just really, I mean, you really need to cut ties, and these are, you know, not that you're going to dehumanize them or anything, but those are situations that are in the past. You're not trying to continue any kind of relationship with these folks, or let your fiance, you know, have the opportunity to try to find out, you know, the details beyond what's necessary. I don't know.
Yes, as a general rule, I think that is right. You don't want to get into individuals and specifics and fixate on things that would kind of be haunting or daunting to you, or to the re-traumatizing for you, or to your significant other. I would say there could be situations, and that's why I said talking with a counselor, writing the questions down before being hasty to answer them. Talking with a counselor may be useful, because there can be legitimate categories of importance, like, you know, is this someone that that I'm going to be interacting with is still in your life. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, then there may or may not be a necessity to know how to create your boundaries in a healthy way. Mm-hmm. The point is to not have gratuitous details, mm-hmm. but to build a foundation of health for the future. So is the aspect of specificity, the detail of either what happened or with whom, important to protecting your future relationship? Mm-hmm. That would be a litmus test, and you may need outside help to discern that. And that's why writing the detailed questions down and really thinking about that and getting some guidance even could be really wise.
That's good. Well, remember, folks, we've mentioned this before, but we do have, like Jeremy being one of them, we have a team of counselors here at Focus on the Family, as well as a help center where we have a number of resources and tools for you as you navigate your own scenarios, really, with stuff like this. So I would highly encourage you to go to focusonthefamily.com and look for some of our resources. Click on our counseling link and maybe get some advice there. Or you can call our main line, 1-800, the letter A and the word family. And there will be someone there that can answer your call, and you can kind of share that, and they will get you to the appropriate person based on what level of advice or care you need. So we're really privileged here at Focus to have a team of counselors and chaplains who are there if you really need to walk through a specific situation. So, Jeremy, thanks so much for weighing in on this and really giving some good guidelines for a conversation like that that needs to happen.
And we'd love to talk to your listeners if we could come alongside for a brief consultation. It's our privilege. So.
Absolutely. Very good. Well, that is it for this week's show, everyone. Write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can hear from you in the future and we can answer your future questions. We love to do that, and we love to have that one-on-one conversation with you as well. Make sure that you like our page on Facebook if you have not already, so you can get our daily updates just on what's going around here at Boundless, and we can keep you in the know. That is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.
A donor-supported ministry of Focus on the Family.